Andy's Garden Shed on Cambridge 105.
Welcome to the second edition of Mandy's Garden Shed, Cambridge 105's gardening programme. Once a month, we reach out to all the gardeners across the city and beyond with a few tips. We answer your questions and we've even got an allotment. So in the show today, we've got a bit of a superstar in the show today because Jason Donovan will be talking to us about his garden. Yeah, you really do need to stay tuned for that one. Also, we will be up on the allotment with Nicola and myself. It's only our second time out as far as the months are concerned on the allotment. So has much happened since last month? We'll be finding out about that. And then the wonderful Peter Jackson from Scottsdale's Garden Centre will be answering your questions. We've had a number of them on Mandy's Garden Shed Facebook page. And also they are phoning into the Garden Centre as well. So I reckon we've got it well and truly covered as far as Mandy's Garden Shed is concerned for April. That Sharon Shannon tune should have given you plenty of time to kick the mud off your boots, settle down in your favourite armchair and listen out for the next hour because we are absolutely packed up to here with gardening. Now, without more ado, time to visit our allotment for a progress report. So let's whisk you all away to where Nicola is waiting to introduce some new friends. Well, March has certainly brought us a mixed bag of weather. We've had quite hard frosts at night, very little rain, and that's very evident up here on the allotment, Nicola, and also, of course, some beautiful early spring sunshine. But there's no doubt about the fact that if you can hear the birds in the background singing and tweeting away, nature is alive and most certainly kicking. And that's the first thing we're actually going to do today is to introduce a little bit more nature into our pond.
We are. The first thing that welcomed us when we came back today was some beautiful tortoiseshell butterflies. So obviously there's a slight rise in the temperature in the air, but there is a strong breeze. So I'm hopeful of a good tan today. First of all, priorities. But we are indeed. We're standing by the pond at the moment and we have had a somewhat precarious car journey here. balancing a nice ice cream tub of frog spawn, complete with oxygenating plants and one of those other things that you, I can't remember what you called it, a bug of some sort.
A little water bug, I think.
Indeed, indeed. So we've brought those all to the allotment. I'm hoping I'm not going to put my foot in the tub now because it's got this far very safely. So we now are going to introduce, hopefully, our new frogs to their new home.
And I have actually double-checked that this is perfectly all right to do because, of course, if anyone knows anything about frog spawn, it takes a couple of years for the frogs actually to get going and to return to the pond where they were initially hatched. That's certainly my understanding of it. But it is going to be very important as far as the garden is concerned because we're very, very keen not to use chemicals on the garden to keep the slugs and the snails away. So, consequently, we're bringing in our own little army, which currently are encased in a giant slick of jelly. And incidentally, we have gathered the frog spawn from our own garden and for some friends' gardens in Cambridge, so we are indebted to them for allowing this frog species to be nurtured in our brand new allotment garden pond. So are you going to do the honours?
I will. I'll do it. It's going to be so exciting that the first time we come up here and we see a little tiny frog. But here goes. Here they go.
Welcome, boys and girls.
There we go, and there they are, and they have sunk instantly to the bottom of the pond. I'm not sure if they're supposed to do that.
A good sign or a bad sign.
When we gather them, they were certainly floating on the top. The other important thing, of course, about introducing wildlife to your pond is that when it does come out to do a spot of sunbathing, it does need a lot of cover around it. And what we've also gathered from our own garden pond is a series of little marginal plants and things like that. Now, I brought some wild strawberries today, which I'm going to actually busily plant over there because they absolutely run riot and also help to make the edge pretty. And I've also got a lovely oriental poppy, which I'm going to put at the front as well, which have large leaves. And into the pond, I've actually cut up a sort of selection of water iris. Put them in one of these little baskets that you use for your garden pond because those particular ones are actually going to live in the water as opposed to the marginals around it. So that's the pond work done. There is another thing that we ought to say that we have got that's brand new, which arrived. We're doing our best on our allotment to sort of beg, borrow and steal, in some cases, various things. But we had a long chat about the possibility of a composter.
We did, and we decided really that a composter is never going to be sort of the nicest part of the allotment. It's probably one of the most essential parts, but not the pleasantest. So we thought we would at least start with a nice, clean, fresh one. And we have placed it in position. Before we put it in position, we dug the soil underneath it, loosened that so that the worms have a nice route in and out towards our compost, and hopefully they will do their stuff. And we just put another load in there today. And I don't know, it must take ages. Does it take ages?
I don't know, because we were absolutely amazed. Now we've actually started collecting things for compost at home after sort of preparing a meal. It absolutely amazes me just how many peelings and all the other stuff that goes to create a roast dinner for two. It's extraordinary.
It is. It's a good sign we eat a lot of veg, though. Five a day, no problem here.
Okay, so the composter is in place. It's one of those green, all singing, all dancing, dome-shaped, I think they call it a beehive composter, in glorious plastic. There it is. A little vent, yes, which we raise up eventually and presumably at some stage when we dig our spade in a year's time, yeah. Glorious, glorious stuff is going to come out, which we'll then put on the vegetable plot.
Yeah, although I don't think the listeners will thank us for hanging around in this area too much because I swear they can smell that through the radio.
Now, as I mentioned, we brought a number of plants that we're going to be putting in around the pond. You might think we're just concentrating on the pond, but of course it's very important once the wildlife arrive that it is all set up for them.
And it's pretty.
And it is pretty, yes. I wasn't going to say that. I have to report that the rhubarb is showing extraordinary growth at the moment. We did try and bury it a couple of times when we came up here, but it's still going.
Yeah, although I can't help feeling the rhubarb's extraordinary growth is slightly accentuated by the bare soil around everywhere else. But it is looking very, very healthy. I think it may well be the first thing we get to eat that we've grown.
The other thing about the rhubarb is the leaves are very large, and so I'm sure the frogs will appreciate that. On to the main part of the garden, although we should mention that it being spring, last time we talked on the radio about the allotment. We had planted a few little spring plants. We planted a little bunch of anemones. We put in some tulips, and we spent an awful lot of time exhuming bulbs, of which we had no idea what they were. We thought they might be daffodils. We thought that they were certainly going to be springtime. But we dug them up from the main plot, because obviously we don't want to confuse daffodils with onions, because there has been a story about that recently.
Yes, I'm not quite sure about that myself. I would have thought it was quite easy to tell a daffodil from an onion. Having said that, though, it was one of the loveliest surprises when we came back to the allotment after a bit of a break to see all these beautiful flowers flourishing and coming out. Narcissi, where we thought we'd planted daffodils, that's lovely. The tulips that you mentioned that we planted for our good friend P.D. James, who sadly died towards the end of last year. Tulips were her favourite flower. They've come early. We like to think that's Phyllis ahead of the game as usual. They're red and yellow at the top of the allotment. And the daffodils, going back to what you said just now, when I came here I thought, gosh, my onions have shot up. That's fantastic. And then I looked closer and it was, of course, the rogue daffodil bulbs that we hadn't quite managed to dig out when we did our first digging of the main vegetable plot. So a few things to be gently moved out of the onion bed before we start.
Some things have shown that we did plant last time when we did the radio piece. So perhaps you'd like to take us through, because actually this is quite exciting.
It is. Now, I thought I'd planted my radishes in a straight line. I was absolutely convinced of it. But the good news is they have come up plentifully. And I'm pleased to see that I haven't done my usual and just almost tipped the whole seed packet into one square inch. They are beautifully spaced, but they do wiggle about a bit. But they are here. I'm hoping, because I don't like radishes. I know you do. That's why we grow them. But normally I grow these radishes and they shoot up and they look all really healthy and they get all leggy. And then I pick them and there's no radish on the end. I think probably because I don't water them enough, because radishes really are probably pure water. I'm going to do something about that. They're looking quite healthy at the moment, so I'm determined that they're going to keep that way.
I'm going to use a technical term now. Do you intend to pick them out?
No. No, I can't bring myself to do that. It seems like playing God with plants. Because what, you know, how do you choose?
Moving on swiftly. No wonder the radishes are all so small when they do arrive. Now, your onions, clearly there are some signs of one or two onions, but, oh, yes, there are, yes. Actually. There's quite a
few
there.
The red row that we've labelled is coming on particularly well, I think, which is nice, because I do love a red onion in my salad. The white ones are a bit behind at the moment, but we've got two rows of it, and they are just starting to show there. They're definitely onions and not daffodils.
And I'm delighted to say that I came up here the other day and was quite miserable to find that my broad beans simply were doing nothing. But in a matter of days and a good overnight soaking of rain, there they are. They're just starting to appear. And we're going to have to keep an eye on those, because obviously once they're a little bit further out of the ground, we're going to need to put some sticks on them.
I'm very pleased to see that, because there is no bigger treat for me than a few tender young broad beans. I know you can't stand them, but I can eat enough for two, so that's good. It was worth saying, actually, that the water was one of the biggest problems. Although we had put loads of buckets around the edge, we mentioned that last time, and some bigger tubs as well, a couple of old plastic dustbins to collect the water, they really, really weren't very, very full at all. So we are lucky enough, in the next lot to us, we've got a disused bit of ground, and some old bathtubs are sprinkled around there, and they were absolutely full. So we have been transporting water. It's very, very good exercise, but it's also made me realise how much water what do you use when you run a bar? So next time I have a long, deep soak, I might think twice about that.
And I did mention right at the beginning of the piece that we were beg, borrowing and stealing. Well, that was the stealing aspect,
that
wasn't
it? That was the stealing. Yes, that was the stealing. Although they've been there for some time, so I think somebody, whoever left them will be pleased they're in use.
Well, I've got to transplant a few things around the pond today. And the main job, really, of this time in March is to put in the early potatoes. And, of course, we still have quite a considerable amount of digging to do. But we have dug a patch which we think will actually be about the right size for the earlies that we intend to plant this time round. And we're about now to double dig it.
We certainly are. I'm quite looking forward to that. I was a bit disillusioned the other day to spend all afternoon up here digging away. I didn't stop once. And then to look back from the other end of the allotment to see how small the area looked in comparison to the bit that's yet to go. But we have got enough to plant the earlies, and we were very pleased to bring the spuds up today and to see that they had chittered very well.
And the nice thing about chitting spuds is the fact that they can be done in a sort of a windowsill where it's not too sunny, because I think a lot of people, so I have read, that stick them in a sunny windowsill and then only discover that they've shot beyond all compare.
They need light but not sun, so the book tells me.
And what we should say is, I suppose it's only right to say what our intentions are and what we have chosen to plant. So you tell us what you've got there.
Well, I've got Rocket, which is a first early variety, apparently very, very good for boiling and ideal in salads.
And I've got here Vale's Emerald. That sounds all very romantic, doesn't
it? That is.
And this is also best for boiling, steaming with mint. You see, little tiny potatoes. And of course, we're hoping, or keeping our fingers crossed, that we'll be seeing these potatoes again in June when they've multiplied.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that.
Right, well, I'm going to leave you to double dig, and I'm going to get cracking and put some of these little marginal plants in that we've, stolen from our garden. I think it is worth mentioning that if anybody is setting up gardens or allotments or anything else, ask around your friends. Because we had a foray out to the garden centre recently to have a look around at some spring bulbs and plants and that sort of thing for our garden. And it is interesting to note that once those beautiful things that you've planted start to multiply, instead of chucking them in the green bin, ask around, ask the neighbours, ask the friends, because it's a wonderful thing to be able to pass on. I think it's becoming a ginger beer plant to me, this situation, whereby you sort of make the ginger beer and then you pass something on to somebody else.
Yeah, well, you were absolutely thrilled to get into the middle of the main border and decimate the Ulstrom area, so hopefully they'll take up here as well, the nice splash of red.
Fantastic. OK, so that is the March allotment, and we'll look forward to whatever April throws at us in next month's edition of the show.
I'm going to have a bacon sandwich on the bench first, though.
It's always the bench that leads you on, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm not ashamed of it.
Well, I'm with you on that. Come on. Have you got mustard on this one?
Yes, thanks. Yeah, that one's brown sauce.
Mandy's Garden Shed on Cambridge 105.
Yes, that's Nicola and I muddling through our allotment, and there will be more progress, hopefully, in next month's show. Now, Jason Donovan and Ray Coulthard were at the Cambridge Arts Theatre last month in the King's Speech, and I couldn't resist asking them about their gardens. Jason Donovan, 80s icon as far as pop music is concerned, actor, TV celebrity. One question I need to ask you, are you a gardener?
I have a garden that I like to look after, but I wouldn't know much about it other than it looks great in April, May, and I like to mow my lawns. Yeah, that sounds pretty loose, but I do appreciate a good garden.
Yeah, but what do you grow in it? I mean, do you grow anything?
Well,
do you plant anything?
It was established well and truly before I came, so I haven't really had that chance to sort of develop it myself. I do like picking flowers. Does that make me a gardener?
Yeah, I guess so.
I love picking flowers, but I don't know the specifics of what's in my garden, no.
Do you sit in the garden?
Yeah, on the grass. I don't smoke the grass anymore, so that's probably a good thing.
So that sort of gardening. Okay.
Yeah.
And if you had a huge garden and you didn't do any acting anymore and you weren't a pop singer anymore and you didn't do any of that sort of stuff, what would you like your garden to look like?
As it is now, I have a property out of town, and you know, we have a quite a big space there, and that's pretty well maintained. But you know, I can't.
Do you have a gardener? I'm dying.
Yes, I do. I do.
I knew you were going to have to own
that. I want to sound like a man of the people, and I'm trying to avoid the question. Look, that's how honest I am. Do you know what I mean? So yes, I do, and I have a veggie patch, and he plants the vegetables, and you know that.
And you eat them.
Yeah, but I do. I really do. It's one of my therapies. I love mowing lawns. I have this obsession with. You know, cutting the grade of lawn and...
Is it striped?
It can be. It can be if you'd like it striped. I can make it striped. That's how exciting my life is. Yeah. One of my favourite films is Being There with Peter Sellers. Do you know Being There with Peter Sellers? And he was Chauncey Gardner. He used to work in his garden, didn't he? Do you know that film?
Mm.
Yeah, great film. Has nothing to do with my garden or the fact that I have a veggie patch. How's your garden looking?
Fantastic. But I am a gardener.
Are you? Yeah, yeah, great. So you're saying I'm not?
Clearly you're not.
No.
Thank heavens for gardeners. Jason Donovan, thank you very much for not taking us around your garden. Ray Coulthard, actor extraordinaire. There isn't anything really you haven't turned your hand to, but I'm dying to know, are you a gardener?
I am a gardener to some extent. I don't know a huge amount about it, I have to say. But about 12 years ago now, we moved to Whitstable in North Kent, and it was my first time of having a garden, and I have to say I loved it. So I completely annihilated, there wasn't much there to be honest, but I stripped the whole thing back to nothing, and laid a lawn, and had a not particularly big area, but for sort of planting. And but it's fascinating, that stuff of learning, isn't it, that you go okay, and you see things that you like, and I'd planted a black bamboo that went everywhere, and then I planted a variegated Fatsia japonica that went bonkers, and I just thought, okay, I've learnt my lesson. It's that thing that you don't know what it's going to be in sort of 2 years' time. I've 6 months ago moved house, so I've now got a considerably bigger garden than I had. It's about sort of 40 foot by 70 foot or something. So this will be my, when I get back from touring, that's what I'm so looking forward to, is getting to see what my garden is doing, because it is quite established, but it's sort of overgrown, and clearly the people who had it before have done nothing with it for about 7 years, so we can't even quite see what's in it. But I've already built down the bottom of the garden, I've built a big plum, quite sort of handy, so I built a big platform to build a treehouse for my little one. So that's the first thing I did, and then weather and work got in the way, so I'm looking forward to getting back to that. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to going back and seeing what's in it and seeing what I can do with it. I love the planning bit. I love the sort of sitting down with a piece of paper and going, oh, all right, what can I do? And then, and the heights and the levels and trying to get interest in it, and then thinking, well, colour. So what colours am I going to go? It's that. I mean, there's so much you can do. I love the, you know, just the variety of what you can do. I love talking to people who really know their stuff. There's nothing better than, you know, getting somebody in and they can go, have you tried this? Have you done it? It's like, never heard of that. What is it? And garden centres. Love a trip round a garden centre looking at what. So, yeah, I'm not a particularly knowledgeable gardener, but I'm a very keen gardener and very much looking forward to seeing what I can do with my new one.
Mandy's Garden Shed on Cambridge 105.
We were listening there to Jason Donovan and Ray Coulthard, who were at the Arts Theatre in Cambridge earlier on last month in the King's Speech, trying to discuss their gardens. Time for your garden questions now.
Mandy's Garden Shed on Cambridge 105.
Well, I've transported myself as if by magic to Scottsdale's Garden Centre just outside Cambridge. And Peter Jackson, our horticultural expert here on Mandy's Garden Shed, is bracing himself, because I have to say that although we only had the first show last month, Peter, the questions have been tumbling in both on Facebook. I know that a number of people have phoned the centre to put their questions through. So I think we had better rattle through these. Could I just say that your garden centre is looking absolutely beautiful this Easter, and presumably equally bracing themselves for all the people that are sort of going to come up here and start sorting out the garden?
Thank you very much. I mean, Easter is the traditional starting time for a lot of gardeners. I know, you know, many of the good old gardeners, we've been gardening all the time right the way through the autumn and the winter. But the Easter weekend seems to kickstart the sort of average gardener. And yes, at the moment the weather's looking good, the centre's looking good, so we're bracing ourselves. The only disappointing thing we have, of course, is that the centres have to close on Easter Sunday. You know, that's the law, we have to do it. Go out early and get the requirements that you need.
And then spend all day Sunday in the garden. How lovely would that be? Let's get straight on to the questions. And we start with a question phoned in from Janice in Arbury. Pruning roses, when to prune them, and also when to spray for black spot and any of the other things that, of course, that roses are prone to.
Well, obviously, from now on is the ideal time to prune roses. The one thing with rose pruning, we've got to kind of look at what type of rose are you actually pruning. If they're the traditional bush roses, the hybrid teas, floribundas, things like that, we can prune them back now. Take out the old wood, prune to kind of outward growing buds. How far is always the difficult one is how vigorous is the rose. The very, very vigorous roses we can cut back by probably 50%. Medium growing ones by about 25%. The very, very kind of low growing, tiny growing ones a lot less. The big thing with the roses when we're doing with climbing roses is identifying the difference between the climbing and the rambling rose. Because the climbing rose flowers on New Year's wood, so we can trim those back now quite hard and shape them. Try and get as much growth going horizontal as you can, because that will give you much, much better flower initiation. If it's a rambling rose, of course, it will only flower once, but on second year wood. So if you've got any old flowered wood left, you can cut that out. But the new growth that it made last year, the previous year, that's the growth to tie in, because that is the growth that's going to flower this year. So that's why it's a little bit difficult over the phone, unless we can ask questions, ask varieties, things like that. But as a rule of thumb, start pruning now. Second part of the question, good question about the black spot, because it was a bad year last year for black spot. The sooner as the leaves are starting to emerge, and they are now quite quickly, any good fungicide you can apply to them. You can buy a combined chemical now with an insecticide and fungicide mix, so that you're killing off the aphids and the mildews and the black spots. But the earlier you start, the more chance you have of preventing it.
So happy gardening to Janice. And could I just say, we don't want anyone phoning in today or texting in today, because we're doing this in advance, because by the time the show goes out, you'll probably be on the golf course.
With a bit of luck, in weather like this, yes.
OK, so that's Janice's question. Colin, who lives in Cambridge, says, can you lift and divide hostas now? Also, can you prune silver birch now?
Right, question one, the hostas, ideal time to lift and split them now. You can lift quite big clumps, split them carefully, whether you use an old carving knife or a couple of sharp spades or anything like that, absolutely fine. If they're really big, established clumps, save the plants on the outside of the clumps. It's the inside which is going to be barren. But ideal time to do it now. And I'm sure Colin knows hostas and slugs go together. So when you've actually lifted them, divided them, give them a good watering in, a little bit of fertiliser, but do watch out for the slugs. They are about in great numbers at the moment, and they can graze off the foliage of these lovely newly emerging, not only hostas, but any perennial, anything like that. So over the weekend, a little bit of slug watch. Second question, the silver birch, stay well away from them. If we start cutting sizable branches or stems of silver birch now, they could actually start to bleed. So silver birch, we would much rather see you prune in the late part of the summer and the autumn, when they're going dormant. Because once these trees, if we cut them and they start to bleed, they can be quite difficult to actually stop them bleeding. So good question. And so hostas, keep your head down, get those going. Silver birch, keep away.
Marvellous. And it is also worth mentioning that there are quite a number of places in Cambridge which are conservation areas, and sometimes if you are thinking of even just reducing the size of quite a large tree, you do need to check with the council. I had to do this recently over a sycamore tree, so that's an added bit of advice. You're listening to Cambridge 105. It's Mandy's Garden Shed, and we're talking to Peter Jackson from Scottsdale's Garden Centre, who's taking your questions today. So let's move on to Lisa. Now, Lisa says, is it too early to sow grass seed, and which is cheaper, seed or turf?
Right, well, I mean, we can sow grass seed now. There's no problem with that. Grass seed on a large area would certainly be cheaper, but you have to go through the preparation, getting the soil right, getting it level, trying to get rid of any perennial weeds, things like that. Look at the seed that's available to you. We've got seed here that will germinate in 3 to 4 days, even in quite low temperatures. The position of the lawn, is it in shade? Is it in full sun? Do you want a hard-wearing grass mixture for the children to play on, or the dogs, or you know, general-purpose lawn? Do you want a very, very fine lawn? Those are the sort of things to look at. But seed would certainly be the cheaper, but, of course, turf is instant. It's probably a little bit easier to prepare your ground for turf, but you can get a nice turf. One turf usually covers about a square metre, and it's pretty instant. And within probably 2-3 weeks, certainly, of laying the turf, you can be walking on it, cutting it, and everything else. So it's one of those things. It's do your sums. The seed packets will tell you roughly how many square metres they will cover. The turf comes per square metre, but it's pretty instant.
OK, so it's either be patient or instant. Rosie, we were talking about sort of shady areas of lawn stuff, and Rosie on the Facebook page has put up a question. She says, could we have suggestions for part of a garden which is north-facing, very shaded, and has dry soil, and the dry soil she thinks is due to a large tree in the park next door drinking the soil dry? This often happens, doesn't it?
It does, and it makes the establishment of the plants that little bit more different. There are a lovely range of plants that will survive in that position, there's no doubt about that. The problems usually come is getting them established. So for the first 2 years, Rosie, I'm afraid we're going to have to be on you, telling you to water, add some nutrient as a supplement to the plant. Once the plants get established, then you can walk away from them. But if you think that you're going to go to the garden centre, pick up a list of plants, plant them and forget them, and they'll do well this year, save your money and your heartache. But there's a wonderful list of plants. Look at the periwinkles, a lovely range of vincas in whites, in blues, in a magenta colour, really good range. In the dark shade, use the green varieties. If you get a little bit of light, a little bit of light, better light intensity, look at the variegated varieties. Don't forget the ferns. There is a wonderful, wonderful selection of hardy ferns, both evergreen and deciduous varieties. Don't fall into the trap of getting all evergreens, because they can look a little bit mundane. Mix some of the deciduous varieties in, where you get those most wonderful autumnal colours and the beautiful bracken colours through the winter. Other shrubs, there's a lovely shrubby honeysuckle called Lonicera piliata that will do well. A Japanese spurge called Pachysandra terminalis. But, you know, if you go onto one of the website pages, look at the library, there's some wonderful books. Spend 20 minutes, half an hour at your local garden centre, plant centre. They will point you into the right direction. But one cannot emphasise enough, it is getting them established. You know, they're juvenile when you first buy them. We've got to let them grow a little bit before we can let them loose.
So Rosie doesn't need an Easter egg for Easter. She needs a very large watering can.
That's right.
Now, Jill would like your suggestions, Peter, for autumn flowering plants on clay soil. I know that we're absolutely bursting with spring at the moment, but all gardeners have got to look forward, haven't they?
They have, and autumn plants, obviously it depends what kind of height, what type of plant. In the herbaceous plants, the perennials, of course, the lovely Japanese anemones, they are a picture. You know, from the pale pinks, dark pinks, whites, dwarf, medium, tall, flowering away for weeks and weeks and weeks. The lovely rebeccias, again, tend to be in the yellows, dark yellows, pale yellows, dwarf, medium, tall varieties. If we want some kind of instant colour, we're looking at plants like dahlias. You know, dahlias give us really good, long-lasting autumn colour.
And it always used to traditionally say that dahlias were difficult because they used to get earwigs. I mean, does that happen anymore?
Yes, it does. But, I mean, you know, it's one of those things you have to live with, you know. If they're just for showy garden plants, they're absolutely fine. And a great time now to actually get your dahlia tubers and get them planted, you know, for that lovely colour. For shrubs, of course, well, yes, we've got autumn flowering shrubs, the lovely buddleias. Flower nice and late, great plant, will bring the butterflies and the bees into the garden. Lavatera as a tree mallow makes a good plant. Hibiscus, hardy, lovely colours from blues to pinks to whites to reds. So there's a lot of colour that we can bring into the garden, not only in flower, and I would say flower is important, but look at foliage. look at some lovely red foliage, yellow foliage, silver foliage. You know, we all seem to go a little bit flower mad sometimes, where foliage can be a lot more reliable.
So a bit of autumn planting to be done there for Jill. Lindsay says, when is the best time to prune a pyracanthus and a cotoneaster?
Right, I always wait until they've flowered, because otherwise I find so many people, when they go in early, they come back and say, well, my plant hasn't flowered and buried very well this year. So I think it's much better to live with it through the spring until the early summer, see where they've flowered. Obviously, where they flower, they're not going to grow as much. We know that then is going to flower and give us the berry, and then we can prune. So hold back on the pruning of those until you've seen them flower, and then prune them. Once you've pruned them, I like to give them a good feed, general purpose fertiliser, rose food, anything like that. And if you want to hide the pruning wounds fairly quickly, and some of us, when we do have to cut them back fairly hard, it's a good idea. It's a good idea after pruning to apply a liquid plant food, and that gets the plant. It's like a tonic to you and I once we've been unwell, and it gets that plant growing very quickly and will hide those pruning wounds.
There you go, Lindsay. Wait for the flowers. Now, Anne says, could she have suggestions? She's looking for 4 highly scented climbers to put around a pergola, and she would like one of them to be evergreen. Suggestions?
No problem at all. The evergreen one, I would take a choice of 2. There's a very lovely evergreen honeysuckle called Lonicera halliana, which is yellow in flower, white when it's open, very, very scented. Another plant, which would probably be in one of my top 10 of favourite plants of all time, is the evergreen jasmine. Has a lovely name of Trachylospermum jasminoides. But it's evergreen, green foliage through the summer. In the winter, it goes a lovely magenta colour. But through the early spring and right through the summer, the most wonderful, pure, white, fragrant flowers. And any of the listeners, I'm sure, that have been into the south of France or Tuscany and been out into one of the lovely tavernas and cafes there, that's what's planted there. Other good ideas are deciduous jasmines, of course, are very, very scented. We can do it in white and pink. Don't forget, probably, a climbing rose. You know, climbing rose is a wonderful choice of colours, flower size, and things like that. Sweet peas, there's a perennial sweet pea with a lovely fragrance. It's a nice question, because I think lots of gardeners now are kind of, well, either not aware or unsure of fragrant plants. And there are so many lovely fragrant plants for us to enjoy.
There we go, Anne. There's a few ideas for you there. Now, Jane is an interesting one, because I've got a similar problem. Jane says, why have all my anemones come up red when last year they were mixed colours?
Probably because the plants have come under stress. And be the stress from the weather, from temperature, from lack of nutrient, something like that. Plants are very, very good because, of course, they will probably go back to their strongest parent. It's a little bit like when we mention reversion. And lots of the plants, you know, they're hybridised and hybridised. When they get a little bit under stress, they will often do that. I wouldn't worry. I would let them flower with the anemones. I will probably deadhead them. Once I've deadheaded, give them a really good feed of liquid seaweed, a general purpose foliar feed, and let the foliage die back naturally into the corms. Hopefully, if we get a slightly better growing year and better weather, they'll probably come back.
Marvellous. So they need a little bit of care and attention there. Let's go back to... We have so many questions here. I don't know if we're going to actually get through all these today. Let's go to Pat. She is in Histon, and she says, how do I prune a large overgrown ceanothus? Oh.
Well, ceanothus, beautiful, beautiful shrub, can grow very, very quickly and get ungainly quickly. The only time ever to prune a ceanothus is immediately after flowering. And if we cut back into old wood, unfortunately, it has that reputation of not rejuvenating. So, Pat, we'd really want to know how hard you're going to cut it back, because if it's going to get cut back very, very hard, my recommendation would be to root some new cuttings. Cut your plant back hard. It will tell you very, very quickly whether it is going to survive or not, and then you've got another generation to put there. If it's not too bad, as soon as it's finished flowering, cut back into no more than last year's growth. And if you look at the colour of the stem, it'll go from a kind of a pale green, dark green into brown. We can cut into the green growth. We can't cut into the brown growth. But lovely range of plants, and it's a plant where, to be honest, if I cut back very, very hard and lost the plants, it really wouldn't hurt me to dig that one up and go to your local garden centre and buy another one. They are well, well worth growing.
And also, of course, if you do cut them back, like I did to mine, if you're lucky and you do it at the right time, you get a second flowering sometimes.
That's right. And there's such a wonderful range of colours of blues now, from the real darkest of blues through the mids, through the lights. And it's a versatile shrub. You know, you'll see climbing forms, shrub forms, ground cover forms. You know, it's a really good, high-reward shrub, but timing, you know, so many times when we do pruning and timing go hand in glove, and ceanothus is certainly when it's finished flowering.
We've got a vegetable question. We've had a lot of flower questions. Here's a vegetable question from Morris, who's in Trumpington. Morris says, how do I grow potatoes in pots? How many and what type of soil and feeding and watering? So general maintenance once you've got them in the pot.
Well, a good question. Depending on the size of the pot, between 3 and 5 potato tubers. When I'm growing them in pots, I tend to kind of put about, well, probably 6-8 inches of compost in, plant the potato tubers, and then just cover them with about 4-5 inches of compost. And then as they grow, as they emerge, then I will cover the new growth with the compost. It's a bit like when we used to grow them in the ground, when we used to earth them up. And you can do that until you get to the top of the pot or container. Growing medium, I like probably something with a little bit of soil in, so I tend to use a John Innes and multi-purpose mix compost. I've tried the all soil ones, and I found they go down very, very hard. So I like a nice open compost, so any of the, you know, proprietary makes, but with a mix of John Innes and multi-purpose compost. Watering, of course, we don't know the weather, but they don't ever want to really dry out, but they never really want to flood either. So probably once, twice a week, you know, something like that, unless we have a hot, dry summer. Every week or 10 days, they will respond very well to a little bit of liquid feed, and funnily enough, it's a tomato food that they'll respond to. And I find with the bags, and it's a trick I learned a few years ago, of course, the natural potato holm goes out horizontal. I tend to put 3 or 4 bamboo canes and grow them like a pyramid, like we would runner beans. And that way I can get a lot more in a small area. So if you're growing in a small area or on a balcony, you're growing them up. And I found particularly in, was it 2012, when we had the very, very wet summer and lots of people had potato blight, my varieties didn't get potato blight because, of course, the foliage was in the air and drying. So there's a tip for you. You know, grow them up an obelisk. You might get your leg pulled tremendously, but and they're very, very good. You'll be amazed how much of a yield of potatoes that you can actually get out of a pot.
And it's certainly spud time, that's for sure. Susan in Cambridge, I was given lovely pots of daffodils for Mother's Day. They finished flowering now. What should she do?
Good question. I would think there's a lot of people out there with a lot of bulbs in the same position. Deadhead them. And all we do is literally take the dead flower head off. We needn't take the long stalks, although you can if you want. Keep them watered. Give them a little bit of feed. Foliar feed's ideal. And then you've got that painful few weeks to watch the foliage die back. And it must die back naturally, because if not, we're going to have blind bulbs next year. Find a nice area in the garden, plant them, and hopefully enjoy them for many years to come. There is far too many lovely plants like that that have had their day, and people look at them and throw them away, and it is so, so sad. So, no, give them a chance.
Well, as we heard earlier, Peter, on Nicola and my allotment, I mean, we spent an awful lot of time lifting a lot of daffodil bulbs and putting them into sort of bulb pits to make sure that we didn't lose anything. And they are now flowering and looking fantastic. Okay. So there we go. Darren in Milton, he has box plants growing in pots, but they are turning yellow and looking a little bit unwell. Can they be revived?
Hopefully, yes. I mean, we'd really want to know, is it lack of water, which it probably could be. So I would certainly go out there this weekend and give them a really good water. The other thing is certainly going to be nutrient, which is food. You know, get a really good top dressing of a all-season fertiliser, put that around the pots. Look at how much new compost they've got. You know, every time we use these plants, every time we water them, we lose a bit of compost. Ideal time now to check any plants growing in containers permanently. Go and get a nice bag of fresh compost and top them up. Hopefully, you know, within the next 6-8 weeks, they should start to get their colour back. If not, warning bells would start to ring, and then it would really be, you know, either you know, bring a photo in or bring a piece of the plant in so that we can actually have a look at it. But most times the box are very, very hardy. They are very, very good at telling us when they're thirsty and hungry. Sometimes we're not very good at picking those warning signs up.
And it's also worth mentioning that if you would like to put a picture of an ailing plant on the Mandy's Garden Shed Facebook page, then we can actually see it. These days, it's so easy to just lift a photo on your iPad and stick it straight onto Facebook. Mandy's Garden Shed is the place to go. And, of course, that's also the place where a number of people have been leaving their questions, which is absolutely ideal. And if you're not signed up to Mandy's Garden Shed, it's just easy. Go onto Facebook, Mandy's Garden Shed, no sort of gaps or anything else, just type that in and it will lead you there. You're listening to Cambridge 105 and we are midway through the garden question time aspect of the show with Peter Jackson from Scottsdale's Garden Centre. Now, next it's Laura. Now, Laura has an olive tree which has lost its colour. The leaves are falling off. What can be done as it's in a focal position in the garden? So basically she really doesn't want to lose it.
No one would want to lose a lovely olive tree. Olives, you know, have taken this winter quite badly, actually, and it's a shame because it's been a mild winter, and a lot of them are doing that. I think it's probably going to be coming down to food. They do want some good some plant food. So I would actually start to feed the roots with a long-term fertiliser, a general one, something like a rose food, something with trace elements. I would try and give it a bit of a boost by putting a foliar feed on, where we're actually spraying the feed onto the leaves so that it can take it. If it's dropped an awful lot of leaves, I would be very tempted to cut some of the branches back, because I've seen a lot of olives around where it's a nice tree, but they've got lots of naked stems and all the lovely foliage tends to be on the end.
You're describing an olive tree I have at home in a pot.
and you know, I don't think they ever look as good. So I would be very, very tempted to lightly prune it. And by lightly pruning it, tipping most of the growth, but some of the growth take back as far as probably 50%. Trying to get that new foliage growing with good growth on. So a little bit of, again, you know, if you're unsure, you know, post a photo to Mandy's Garden Shed, and then we can actually look at it and probably help you a bit better. But I certainly wouldn't despair on it, not at all. It will come back. And if you go and visit the garden centres or any of the big nurseries that do specimen plants and you see some of the olive trees, I mean, some of those, they've been pruned back with chainsaws. And moved, so it will come back. But I think we've got to look kind of long term by cutting that tree back to making it better. Because if not, if we let it go and go and go, it's going to be a little bit harder job.
Marvellous. Well, good luck with that one. Let's just hope that she can hang on to it. Now, where should we go here? Louise, is it Lewis or Louise? I think it might be Louise. Has an overgrown hedge of privet. Can it be hard pruned now?
Well, yes, it can be hard pruned now. I mean, it's the ideal time to prune it. The only warning bell for me would be, of course, is if it's a large overgrown one, I would really go along very, very carefully to see that we haven't got any birds' nests or potential birds' nests there. Our wildlife wants all the help that it can get from us gardeners. If there's no wildlife, if there's no birds' nest there, yes, certainly, you know, we can cut it back. Give it a really good feed afterwards. After a few weeks, when we see those new growths appearing, then yes, put a foliar feed on it. But please check for any birds' nests.
And two very quick questions. We're sort of going against it all now here. Now, let's say, Graham, moss and weeds on the lawn, is it worth treating or is it best to kill it off altogether and start again with new turf? So he's obviously beside himself.
Yes, I mean, lawns can get to that sort of situation. It really depends on how instant Graham wants it, how big it is. There are lots of really good combined lawn weed killers and moss killers. Once they've been on, they'll work. Then you've got the job of kind of raking out the bare patches and then either reseeding or whatever. As we've said before to one of the earlier listeners, turf is pretty instant, so there's nothing stopping you spraying that off now and, you know, preparing the soil and laying turf. If it's a small patch, one would say probably that's the better one. If it's a large one, you've got a little bit more work. And it comes down to so many things. You know, we've got to look at the pound, shilling and pence.
If I remove the moss from my lawn, I wouldn't have any left, so I love moss. And finally, I think for this time round, Martin. He has a hedge of Fertonia red robin. Yes, red robin's easier to say. The leaves have black blotches all over them, and they're turning yellow and falling off. It sounds like he needs some help.
Yes, I mean, it could be a lack of nutrient, which, you know, is probably number one, but it could be they are suffering from a leaf spot. It's a little bit like black spot on roses. If it's that, what we would say is there's a very, very good fungicide called Fungus Fighter. Drench them with that, give it about 3-4 weeks, give it another application. As the leaves yellow and fall off, it's essential we rake them up and burn them. They don't want to be just left on the ground, because then, of course, the spores are in the ground and then we've got that life cycle going round. So a little bit of plant or crop hygiene will help tremendously. Fungicide, yes, that will clear it. And then really, you know, yes, a really good feed. But again, you know, a nice thing to actually send to you on your Facebook, so that we can tell exactly what it is. But lots of Fertinias, you know, we're seeing that on the side of the road, and whether it's been as a shrub or a hedge or a tree, they are all having those sort of symptoms.
We're out of time as far as the questions are concerned, Peter. We shall look forward to your pearls of wisdom when actually we go into May next time round, which is extraordinary. Don't forget, you can leave your questions on the Mandy's Garden Shed Facebook page, or you can phone into Scottsdale's with them, as several people have done this time round, or just generally get in touch by text. Hopefully Peter will be back in the studio with us next month. But Peter, before we disappear, a couple of things we really ought to be doing. We've talked about pruning and that sort of thing, but other things that we ought to be doing in April?
Well, certainly April is a month where we're doing a lot in the garden, but it also can be frustrating because we seem to think that we can kind of swim before we actually get in. Any of you there with tender bedding plants, please watch them. You know, take them out on a nice day, listen to the weather forecast, any likelihood of cold nights, frosts, of course, bring them in. If a lot of them are growing very, very quickly, don't be frightened to pinch the tops out. You know, there's it's much better to have a short, dumpy, bushy plant to plant out than one with a long, soft stem. Pest and disease watch your lilies for things like lily beetles. Watch your plants of rosemary and lavender for a pest called rosemary beetle, which is going to become quite a problem. Certainly, we've mentioned slugs. Watch out for slugs. You know, even that dreaded Spanish slug is now in the county and causing great devastation. Ideal time for planting your hardy plants, and whether you want new perennials, whether you want new shrubs, whether you're going to plant a new hedge, fruit trees, ornamental trees, ideal time of the month to visit your local centres, nurseries, and get those planted. And I suppose number one, keep on top of those weeds. And whether those weeds are in your gravel drive, whether they're in your patio, in your lawn, in your borders, keep on top of those weeds, because if we can catch them when they're small, it's not too bad. It's when you come to us and say, oh, they're already 2 foot high, 3 foot high, then a little bit more difficult.
Thank you, Peter, for this month. Look forward to seeing you in May.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
Mandy's Garden Shed on Cambridge 105.
And we've just time before we dust our surfaces down to join Nicola under the hairdryer. The magazine she's chosen this month is The Gardener's World.
The Gardener's World again this month. First of all, I was absolutely horrified to find another article on what to prune this month, because I thought we'd dealt with pruning in March. I didn't realise it was an ongoing series. For those of you who are mourning the demise of Top Gear temporarily, you will be very, very thrilled to find that there is a huge article on lawnmowers. I mean, Jason Donovan would love this particular issue of Gardener's World, because there is every lawnmower for every price range in the world. There's a wonderful article on pots, on how to present the best pots, mixture of flowers for sunny places or damp places. There's time savers, there's big impacts. You and I went to Newlyn once.
Yeah, we did.
And it is living proof that pots bring out the competitive streak in all of us. So if you really, really do want to get one ahead of your neighbour with your pots, then this is the issue to go. One article I found particularly interesting was growing a year of veg from a metre plot. And you can have a family-sized harvest of veg all year round from a metre-sized plot. And what she's done is divided the metre square into 16 smaller squares. Hmm. And she shows you which crops to plant in which squares, depending on whether they're quick, whether you're sowing for the future. Because this is my problem with gardening. It's this looking ahead business. Because I grow my radishes and I think, oh, they're lovely. But of course, I haven't planted anything coming up behind them, have I? So she tells you how many seeds, even, because that's my other problem. The whole packet goes in, as I said. How many seeds to plant in each square, when to harvest them, soil conditions, sowing for later, all that kind of thing. And genuinely, it does look like you get a year's worth of veg. What I did love about this issue, though, it is the wildlife issue, because that's one of the aspects of the gardening thing that I personally find most interesting and most enlightening. There's a wonderful section on moths, which moths to look for in your garden, because we all know about looking for butterflies. But moths, and the ones they've chosen here, the clouded border, the eyed hawk moth, the nut tree tussock, worth looking out for just for the names alone. We've got an article on the smooth newt, which also confuses me, because you're supposed to introduce them to your pond for the slugs and snails, but on the other hand, they also eat the frog spawn. So
that's no good.
Where does that sit? Yep. There's no answer here.
Okay.
Stumpery. Something to put in your partially shaded areas. You can have a stumpery, which is sort of logs of different shapes and sizes, half buried in the soil, covered in moss, have wonderful, wonderful insects growing in there. And a brilliant article on bees. There's 250 species of bees. 25 of them are bumblebees. One of them is a honeybee. The rest are something called solitary bees. And there are wonderful pictures of them. It's like Game of Thrones, the life cycle of a bee, I can tell you. It really is.
Well, that's it. Done and dusted. Mandy's Garden Shed. With a quick lurch through the gardener's world from Nicola. Thanks to everybody that's taken part. All your questions to Peter Jackson and to our wonderful allotment. We will be back for the May edition of Mandy's Garden Shed. Whatever you're doing, happy gardening. Rainbow Radio coming up next.